Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. Brian back at Gal producing today's show, and Branham here. Onside engineering. We are broadcasting live at the River House. That's right, I am. At the River House, East River 9. I've already scarfed down a hot bird chicken sandwich. Very good. French fries, cold beer. Fantastic spot to have lunch. Fantastic spot to have a drink. Fantastic spot to play a little golf. Fantastic spot to play some pickleball. Fantastic spot to watch the Open Championship. So it's kind of a do-it-all. It's a utility place is what it is. It's a superstar utility, though.
It's a multitasking paradise of sports, huh?
I think so. I think that's exactly what it is. Day two for the Houston Texans at training camp. I had an epiphany today as I was listening to the Houston Texans talk after their practice today, which our very own Paul Gallant was out there braving the really nice conditions. But I actually had this epiphany when Laremy Tunsil was listed as one of the top 10 players that are 30 years or older. But then it hit me again today. It was a recycled epiphany whenever I was listening to Joe Mixon talk, when I was listening to Danielle Hunter talk. And I think one underrated aspect of the Houston Texans roster and the Nick Caserio build is his balance of youth versus experience at almost every single position. Like, you look at the quarterback spot, okay, C.J. Stroud, quarterback, second year. Who else is in that? Who else is in the quarterback room? Case Keenum, who's a veteran and the greatest college quarterback statistically of all time. Fact, not opinion. Go Cougs. If you want to look at the running back room, you now have that. Joe Mixon's an experienced running back that's been doing it for a long time. Damian Pierce is still only in his third year. He's still on his rookie contract. So, again, a veteran, experience mixed with youth. Look at the receiving room. Nico Collins, Tank Dell, youth. Who did they trade for? Stephon Diggs. And you also still have Robert Woods. You brought back Noah Brown. If you look at the offensive line, you have some youth there. Juice Scruggs, second year. Kenyon Green, year three. Shaq Mason's been in the league a long time. Laremy Tunsil has been in the league a long time. Dalton Schultz, veteran. Brevin Jordan, Kate Stover, young guys. If you look at the defensive end, look at your two defensive ends. You have Will Anderson, second year in the league. Danielle Hunter, who's been in the league forever. Throwing it to Nico Autry there as well. You look at your linebackers. Al Shire, veteran guy. Christian Harris, young guy. Even in your secondary, Jimmy Ward, a veteran with some youngsters like Stingley, like Petrie, like Lassiter. I think that's an underrated aspect of the Houston Texans roster is that Nick Caserio has balanced it nicely with really good young players. Thank you for embracing the suck and sucking and getting really good draft picks. But then having the balance of the veterans in the room as well.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that it was, timing was everything too, because at the time that we were talking about the fighting Rex Burkheads, we were talking about just whoever was cheap and veterans that could at least just, fill a positional need for a year or two. But when it really comes down to brass tacks, when you really have a team that's worth talking about building around and thinking that they can do some things, I like what he's done, because, some of the comments that came out of, the interviews from the first 2 days of camp too, when you hear a Nico Collins talking about, I was in eighth grade watching Diggs play, and now it's pretty awesome that we're on the same team. But it's things that we had talked about when you start breaking it down to the individual position groups and rooms. Scruggs, Patterson, dealing with guys like Tunsil, even a Howard guy who said, hey, I've been here, I've done that, and I've done it here. Tunsil did it elsewhere, came here. But they can kind of give you both sides of the equation, the experience, and some of the guys, whether they were somewhere else or having gone through some of the trials and tribulations of the Texans, they can set the table for the younger guys to work with them. And I love it. That's why, we were talking about when J.J. Watt works with the defensive lineman. I think that's awesome, because the connection is one thing. Yeah, he's in the Ring of Honor and all that. But when you realize how much he knows and what he's learned about technique, and he can teach that to some of the guys that maybe haven't gotten that taught to him before, you can only get better with a combination like that.
But you don't want him on the team.
No, coaching. It's kind of like Maldonado. I'm fine with him being a defensive line assistant coach. He obviously likes working out with the guys. He's an insurance policy if you want to, you know, keep him close to the vest. At the same time, he's got another career he can make money on, but during the week, if he's working with these guys, I like it.
You didn't just compare J.J. Watt, the greatest Houston Texan of all time, to Martin Maldonado, did you?
If the shoe fits, Jeremy, I can do it.
I don't think the shoe fits.
I think experience is one thing Maldonado has, no matter, you know, I'm not looking at career stat-wise, but we know, like, from the prep and all the things we have to overhear about in terms of how he catches and the prep he does before, he has value to a team.
Yeah.
J.J. obviously played it at a much higher level and did a whole lot more, but it just in terms of the fact that he's willing to work with guys, he understands how to teach it as well as just what he's been through to learn it, and I think that can always help.
Yeah, I think that I'm just having some fun, but I think this is how you build a playoff-type team, is that you build through the draft, your best players are usually your young players, and then you supplement the rest of the roster with good veteran players. And I think Caserio's done a good job of that. He's like the core and the foundation of this team are the youngsters, are the guys that are, quite frankly, still on their rookie deal. And now he has supplemented that core and foundation with really good veterans. And I give Nick Caserio, I know we make fun of Nick Caserio a lot, the windows, and he loved to hear himself talk. He talked for 6 minutes off the cuff yesterday. But I do think Nick Caserio is a good general manager, and I give him credit for building a good roster. And I think doing some things that I like my team to do. Young core, fill the gaps with the veterans.
Let's also think about this from the perspective of like other teams in this town. The Rockets were filling their roster with nothing but youth, 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 youth. And at a certain point, when they started to get enough of the youth, they said, we need some veterans. We need a Fred Van Vliet. We need a coach on the floor. We need a Dylan Brooks, a little toughness, but also a big brother type guy, a Jeff Green. And I think that's the best recipe for success in a lot of ways with sports, because you need guys that kind of have all different kinds of experiences, and when they blend together, you can understand how the connection is made to where they get, you know, that kind of tight fabric that you need when you're trying to do things and be competitive to win, not just be, you know, show up on game day.
I think it's a good comp, but I prefer the Astro comp, you know, because the Rockets haven't been to the postseason. Like, I kind of look at Nick Caserio making moves that Jeff Luhnow did ahead of 2017. And no, I'm not saying the Houston Texans are going to go out and win the championship this year. But the Astros were kind of ahead of schedule and made the playoffs in 2015. And you thought, okay, here they go. They're going to take off. They're going to be a consistent playoff team. And they have been, with the exception of the very next year in 2016. They made the playoffs in 15, missed it in 16, made it and won the World Series in 17. What Jeff Luhnow did in the offseason of 2016 going into 2017 was he brought in the veterans that he thought could help this team go to the next level, like a Brian McCann, Beltran, I believe that was that offseason as well. So he made those moves knowing that he kind of needed some of those veterans to bridge the gap with the youngsters. I think Nick Caserio is kind of doing the same thing with Danelle Hunter, pairing him alongside Will Anderson. We say a lot about Stephon Diggs in terms of his attitude, but Stephon Diggs is like loved by all of his teammates that he's ever played with and works incredibly hard, and everybody's talking about how much, you know, it's a great presence to be around Stephon Diggs, et cetera, et cetera. So I give Caserio a lot of credit for building it up this way. Old School says cornerback needs starters. That's the one position I think you could look to where I don't know if there is that veteran like we just listed every other single position. Derek Stingley still in his rookie deal. He's obviously your CB1. Kamari Lassiter, according to all reports, is currently playing outside corner, and it looks like he's going to be the runaway cornerback number two opposite of Derek Stingley. Outside of that, like, Jeff Okuda's not really – I mean, I understand he's on his – like, he's passed his rookie deal. I understand that C.J. Henderson's passed his rookie deal. But I wouldn't consider that, like, the veterans and the experience that we talk about when we mention Laramie Tunsil, Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs, even Azeez Al-Shaair.
No, you're right. And I think that it's one thing that we've discussed as well, that there are veterans that are out there that whether you need them to be your second corner or to be, you know, someone on this squad, whether it's your nickel corner or, you know, just otherwise, there are guys that are still out there that if they do want to add into to the quote that Nick had yesterday, that's a possibility. I don't know that I'm concerned about the fact that they don't have a veteran.
You don't think he was addressing corner, though, do you?
I kind of think he was addressing the secondary. I do. I think that he was thinking about just safety and corner and guys, because there's still some pretty premium talent guys that have good resumes that are out there. and whether you're willing to pay enough or not, I do think that that is part of the equation. I think we've mentioned linebacker, running back, you know, and I think from the running back perspective, we said, I think he personally that he's that's going to be from a team that makes a cut or decides to move in another direction. But I think that the first thing that came to mind was the fact that you've got guys like Simmons, like Diggs, like, you know, Gilmore. There are guys out there that play corner and safety that if through the course of camp you see that it isn't going the way it starts out going, that he has options.
The reason I don't think that's a, really of the plan for Caserio is I don't think Lassiter would be playing outside corner if the idea was we're going to bring in a free agent corner later in camp.
But for now, but right? But he look evidently they're going to start with him there. But if he just doesn't look like he's ready to do it, then I think that that's where he knows, because a lot, like, as even he went up to make sure he mentioned, a lot of these guys don't want to go to camp. He gets it.
Sure.
So,
but I just don't think you would be lining up Lassiter every single day at camp with the idea of, okay, we're going to sign an outside corner in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and then we're moving Lassiter inside. Like, that's putting Lassiter in a bad spot.
Yeah, but I'm not saying right now that that's his plan. I think that right now his plan is to give the kid every chance to win the job.
Then how would he have said that yesterday with corner in mind?
Because of the fact that I think that with Okuda, with Henderson, with guys that he doesn't know what they're going to be able to do, I still think that guys are going to be wanting jobs and think that they can find a way to get on the field with it, and they want to win. That I think that he's looking at the fact that if one or both those guys don't work out, or if it is the fact that Lassiter isn't ready yet, he's got options.
Yeah, I don't think that those kind of guys would accept backup jobs.
You might be right,
quite frankly, and I think that if Caserio was leaning that way, I don't think that they would have Lassiter taking every snap outside. I think they would put him in a position to succeed. I think the Texans are pretty much at corner. Safety, eh. Although I think they're kind of set at safety, too. Like, you drafted a guy in the third round. You brought back Murray. You brought back MJ Stewart. Now, if you play Petrie and nickel some, maybe that brings a safety into play a bit. I actually think they're set at corner. I think that they feel comfortable. And they're the only ones that feel that way. I feel like they think they're comfortable with Lassiter playing outside corner. And I think they really like Miles Bryant. I think they want him to be the starting nickelback. So, you know, you have injuries all the time. Somebody can roll an ankle tomorrow and it changes everything at the snap of a finger. All right, 713-780-ESPN. It's a Friday show, busy show. Todd Callis will be joining us at the top of the hour. Who said it at 4:30? Is he a Mariner or is he a... It feels weird. Like, Astros haven't played in a really long time. It's like second opening day for the Houston Astros. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. ESPN Houston on YouTube. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we come back, which new Texan addition do you feel most confident in to make a big impact this season? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from the River House at East River 9 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It is a beautiful day outside. It is always a beautiful day in Houston, and it's always a beautiful day to play a little basketball, especially if you have a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. Pro Dunk Hoops makes the highest quality basketball goals you will ever find. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof. You have to have that in Houston with the humidity. And height-adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. And with their new goal, 4, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's simple. It's easy to do. It's fun to do. Lightning adjust features, what they call it. You can lower it down to 5 feet, raise it up to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Their accessories, next level as well. It's always beautiful in Houston, but sometimes it gets a little hot. Maybe you don't want to be outside playing with your beautiful Pro Dunk goal until the evening or the sun goes down. Well, you can do that because Pro Dunk has LED light kits, so you can play at night. Backstop nets, pole pad lettering, lots more, and you can order all of this online, including professional installation. Yeah, we mentioned it's idiot-proof. Let the pros come out and install the goals from Pro Dunk at your place. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't have to mess with any ladder or any sort of level. You can't screw it up because the pros are going to install it to perfection. Let them do the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, or visit them online, produnk.com. That's produnk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9, Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Inside the River House, the East River 9, great spot for a bite, a drink, watch some golf, play some golf. A beautiful, beautiful view of downtown Houston as well. 713-780-3776. 0367 says, would King be the veteran corner? I have a bad habit of a lot of times separating my outside corners from my nickel corners, so that's probably why I did that. I guess, but still he's a nickel corner, not an outside corner.
Right, right.
I kind of think they're two totally different positions.
I would agree with you. I think that he's got a shot inside. I just don't see him as an outside corner anymore.
I think there's a shot he doesn't make the team. There's a hot take. Miles Bryant, nickel corner. You don't often carry two nickel guys unless one has safety flexibility. Desmond King doesn't. Desmond King was cut last year for Tavier Thomas. Just saying. That's one that I'm watching. 2370 says Mr. Olympia, Danielle Hunter. He is jacked. He's what I look like when I look in the mirror.
Him and Danielle JJ?
Hunter. I work out.
Yeah, they have the physiques of a Branham. They really do. But yeah, I like Danielle Hunter a lot. Do you think Danielle Hunter will have a better 2024 than John Gernard?
Yes. I do. But I don't know, but again, people are narrow-mindedly going to look at just sacks. But I think that he's going to be very disruptive, I think, because of the fact that he's got someone of a high level of talent on the other side of him and other guys on the D-line with talent, too, like Autry. I think that he is going to have a great overall season in this system. If that means he doesn't have as many sacks as he had a year ago, okay, so be it. I just feel like he's going to be dominant.
Yeah, Hunter had 16.5 sacks last year, 23 tackles for loss, led the NFL. Gernard had 12.5 sacks, 4 fewer, 15 tackles for loss. Hunter played in every single game. John Gernard missed 2 games with a grade 1 ankle sprain. Hunter was talking today, too, about how, like, in the previous defenses he's played in, that he's been asked to, like, read what the offensive line is doing and then react. And he said the difference between that and the DeMeco Ryans defense is that they tell them to just go. Just go. Don't even read. Just go get the quarterback. And I think that's the philosophy of the DeMeco Ryans defense.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Go attack the quarterback and make the quarterback's life living hell.
And then swarm.
Yeah, smart work ethic and relentless mindset.
Yeah, I think that, again, like I said, in this system, I think that no matter what what I say positively or negatively about the Vikings defensive system, I think this is a system that a lot of defensive players want to play in. And I think that kind of having that freedom and that ability to go do what you do best, he's going to excel. And then the talent around him just kind of elevates the opportunities for him to succeed. I'm excited to see what he can do.
Which is a perfect segue into the Houston Texans and the additions that they had this offseason. Which new Texan addition, whether it's draft or free agent, do you feel the most confident in to make a big impact this year?
I'm going to start with Danielle Hunter. I just think that – I'm sorry, not Danielle Hunter. I'm going to start with Autry. I think that Autry's a guy that when you got Hunter and you got him in the building and everybody knew he was the top of the free agent availability for pass rushers, that I think a lot of people weren't very familiar and didn't think enough about the fact that this is a guy that quietly had double-digit sacks a year ago on a Tennessee team that for the most part was forgotten about and not looked at as strongly as they looked at in the past. But I think this dude can still be dominant. And I think, again, kind of like what we were just talking about with Hunter, I think when you put Will Anderson on one side, Hunter on the other side, and you have him that you can do have flexibility to do a lot of different things with, I think he's going to have a really, really big impact on the defense and a really good year. And I'm excited to see him on the field to do what he can do. Again, in a talented defense where they can't pay attention to everybody, I think he's a guy that's going to have a lot of success.
It's going to be interesting to me how much he's on the field. Like, you start a series 1st and 10. Is DeNico Autry out there? I don't know. Like, I don't know how they're going to use DeNico Autry. Like, do they play him at defensive tackle on situations where the other team could be running the football? I'm not sure. And if Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are completely healthy, like, they're going to rotate, et cetera, et cetera. But Autry's the clear-cut defensive end number 3. He's not going to jump Will Anderson. He's not going to jump Danielle Hunter. So I think of those 3 guys, I think Autry's going to be the one that sees the least amount of snaps. I think he plays a lot of defensive tackle, 3-tech especially, in clear passing situations. So I don't know how much – I'm very intrigued to see how much he – like how DeMeco Ryans deploys the defensive line. Now, he's going to rotate guys. Like, even his top defensive ends last year were playing 70% of the snaps. So there's going to be a healthy rotation there. For me, it's Danielle Hunter. I think Danielle Hunter is going to have the biggest impact. And there's a lot of options to choose from. Autry's one. Hunter's one. Mixon's one. Diggs is one. What do you think of Lassiter? He's one. I think it's Danielle Hunter. I think Danielle Hunter is going to have the biggest impact on this football team. I think the pairing of he and Will Anderson is going to cause, you know, problems for offensive linemen. Where do you want to spend most of your focus on if you're the opposing team? Is it Chippen? Is it Dublin Will? Danielle Hunter, et cetera, et cetera. It's a pick-your-poison type of deal. I think Danielle Hunter is going to have the biggest impact. Second for me is tough between Diggs and Mixon. I probably lean Mixon because I don't think he's going to have a whole lot of competition in the running back room, so no one's going to vulture his numbers, where it's the opposite for Diggs. Like, Diggs isn't the best receiver on this team. It's Nico Collins, and yeah, Tank Dell is still around as well, who was a pretty good red zone target and scored a lot of touchdowns and put up huge numbers last year. So I think Diggs will be cannibalized a little bit by his teammates, whereas Mixon, I don't see that happening. So I'll go Danielle Hunter 1, Mixon 2, Diggs 3, Force tough with me between Autry and Lassiter, but I'll go Autry and then Lassiter.
Yeah, see, I think to me, if you're a Texans fan and or, you know, you're pending the success of this team on a guy, I think that's where Lassiter comes into play. I hope he does. I hope he's the guy that we don't have to worry about the other corner position right from the start of camp like we've seen him. I hope that he settles right into that position. I hope that, you know, he proves to everybody he does have the speed and the quickness, and he's going to be just fine, because that's going to put a lot of fear to rest in terms of where an offensive coordinator may look and what the Texans may have to do on the fly to kind of adjust. So I hope that Lassiter factors into that as well. But I would tend to say that with the veterans that they brought in and the group to choose from, it basically lies there. So I'm with you. I think that Diggs obviously is playing for another contract, and there's a lot riding on that. But, I've been a big Mixon guy. I'm excited to see him. I think he's going to fit well here. I think that he's got a lot left in the tank. And so I would put Mixon right up there with Hunter and Autry.
What kind of season do you think Autry and Hunter have? Like, from a sacks, TFL point of view?
I think Autry's going to play inside, and I think they're going to move him around. And I think that he's going to be disruptive, but that doesn't translate again to just sacks. But I think that he's going to get in the backfield. I think he's going to wreak havoc. So I think he's going to have more tackles for loss that I'm going to be interested in seeing. I think that, like I said, I think that Danielle Hunter is going to get more sacks than Grenard had a year ago. I think he's going to be in the range of like 14, 15, 16 like he was a year ago. But I think that's also going to free up Will Anderson, like you said, with the inability to double everybody that you're going to be worried about. I think all three of those guys are going to find time to eat.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Brian, what's the answer for you? Which new Texan addition you think will have the biggest impact on the Texans?
I mean, you guys gave some really good answers, especially with Danielle Hunter. I think he's going to be absolutely amazing. But I'd like to say, as Deese Al-Shahir, their new linebacker coming over from Tennessee, especially when you consider the lack of depth they have at the position, it's pretty much just him and Christian Harris. So I think Azeez Al-Shahir, someone that D'Amico and Casario have been high on, they've had their eye on him for a while. They get him in here. I think they bring him in with a specific role, and considering the depth and the talent he has, I think he's going to make a huge impact on this team, because the Texans aren't really full of playmaking linebackers outside of Azeez and Christian Harris.
Yeah, I forgot about Al-Shahir. If I'm being completely honest, I would have Al-Shahir ahead of Lassiter, ahead of Autry. And he's going to be the one wearing the green dot. Like, yep. He's going to be the guy signaling in the plays, et cetera, et cetera. So I like that answer. I think Al-Shahir is going to be kind of the glue to this defense. He's not going to be the best player on this defense. Will Anderson's going to be better. Danielle Hunter is going to be better. Derek Stingley's going to be better. Al-Shahir might be top five, but to me, he's the glue that holds it all together, the leader, the one that makes them excel as a unit, et cetera, et cetera.
And he can flourish because he knows how D'Amico coaches. He knows the system from his experience. As Brian mentioned, I think it's a great call, because I think that as much as you may have liked what they had previously, I think this is a guy that is a seamless fit that's going to come right in and take it to another level in terms of just quarterbacking the defense and then being able to run around and make plays. So I think I think he's going to have a heck of a year as well. It's going to be exciting to me. And look, the other guy that you mentioned, too, I think Christian Harris, who I've always been high on, I think the way he's kind of come into his own and kind of established his name now, I look for him to kind of also capitalize on the veterans they brought in are going to create a lot of attention. I think he's going to have a great year
as well.
Yeah,
but he's not an addition.
No. I'm just saying I think he's also going to have a great year.
Who do you think has more tackles, Al Shire or Harris?
I think Al Shire does.
I think it's a good race.
Yeah, it would be fun. It'll be fun to watch. I just think that dude covers a lot of ground, and he likes to stick his nose in on everything inside, too. So I would lean that way.
I do, too. I lean Al Shire to have more tackles than Harris, if we're assuming health. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Who do you think will be the most impactful Texan edition? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, what's your boldest Astro prediction in the second post-All-Star break half, et cetera, et cetera? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees broadcasting live from the River House from East River 9 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville is the best in the business. He does a lot of things extraordinarily well. He does Botox, spa treatments, plastic surgeries. But the thing that I have personal experience with is the NeoGraft procedure. The NeoGraft procedure and the PRP are great treatments that absolutely work and are effective to get your hair back. It's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that just are like masks for the problem. These are solutions. These are exactly what you need if you have thinning pattern baldness, whether maybe you have that baboon's butt showing on the top of your head or your forehead has become an 8-head and you don't think there's anything you can do about it but wear a hat. It's not true. Doc Linville's got something for you. And the fact is, PRP is like fertilizer when you have grass on the lawn, but you need it to be thicker and more lush. And if you don't have that grass and there's no way to get it back just with the PRP, that's where the NeoGraft comes in. Because what I found out through meeting with Doc and his staff before I had the procedure was the fact that you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. He takes some of that hair, like planting sod, and repurposes it where you need it most in no time at all. The hair is there. It's growing. It's getting stronger and longer. And the fact is, he's taking it from a spot where it's never going to go away. So 95 to 99% of the follicles that he moves are going to stay and be with you for the rest of your life. You, as a listener to ESPN 97.5, get a bonus that not many people do. People off the street pay $150 just for that consultation that I had. You get it for free. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. Sign up for an appointment. Go in for your consultation. Nothing to sign on the dotted line for. No cash out of pocket. Everything is free. Go in and ask questions, get answers, and learn more about it. You might be the next person to sign up after you hear. And if you do, I'm here to tell you, it is phenomenal. Check them out today. Get that free consultation. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
Some guy's offer is asking for fantasy football advice and texting in from two different numbers. I've fallen for that trick. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live, River House, East River 9 in Edo. Fantastic spot for a variety of different things. Rock the Mic has returned, and it's time to find the newest Houston sports podcast. The winner of Rock the Mic receive a podcast hosted on our ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Whether you already have a podcast or you've always wanted to start one, now is your chance. You can enter by sending a 3 to 5 minute video giving your best Houston sports take to rockthemic975@gmail.com. The winner will be announced at our live finale August 23rd at Carbach. Get your entries in now to rockthemic975@gmail.com. This texture with high praise, D'Amico is recreating that giant Super Bowl winning D-line of Strahan, Umanyora, Tuck, and JPP. What do you think of that comp?
We're not there yet. I think that the ends are in great shape, and looking at both Anderson and Hunter, I'm excited. I believe that the run defense is something I'm going to keep a close eye on. I want to make sure that, you know, Settle and the big F can do the job fully inside and make sure that their run defense is there. But, look, I think it's a huge upgrade from what they had a year ago. And I'm excited to see him with true weapons, a little bit more across the board that he can work with.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with how much pressure they're going to put on the quarterback. I think that's the way to build a good defense in the NFL is to make a quarterback's life as miserable as possible. And I think they have pieces to potentially do that. Now they have to go do it. You know, Nick Caserio talked yesterday. It's one thing to have a good roster, but it's about execution and production. Like, the Texans look good on paper. Now they have to go do it. They have to play it out, and they have to be able to produce to a very high level. 713-780-3776. What is your boldest Astro prediction for the post-All-Star break portion of the Astros schedule?
To me, it's the Astros turn out to be the Mariners of the first half early on. The Mariners are going to, I mean, the Astros are going to just jump on and jump out of the gates. They're going to handle their business, and they are going to be in a position as we get into late August, September, that they are going to have a sizable lead in the division. And this is a division that they are going to, I don't want to say walk away with, but because at the start of the year I thought it would be around 5 to 7 games. I'll say 7 to 10 games, but I think that there's a good chance that the Astros win this division by 10 games.
Yeah, I don't think that that's crazy. I don't think it's crazy.
Oh.
And my biggest prediction actually correlates with that, because if the Astros were to, in 10 games might be lofty, but run away with the division, I think we could see Joe Espada be the manager of the year in Major League Baseball, which sounds crazy, right? Astros, terrible start, way back in the division, 10 games, whatever amount of games they were below 500, et cetera, et cetera. People were calling for Joe Espada's job. They were saying, is he David Culley? Is he Steven Silas? Will he even make it after the first year? Will he be one and done? If he's able to stabilize the ship and then they run away with the division, Joe Espada is going to get Manager of the Year votes in Major League Baseball, quite frankly. So that's my bold prediction, is that Joe Espada, the most interesting manager in baseball, is going to win the Manager of the Year in the same season that people were either A, calling for his job, B, calling him David Culley, Steven Silas, C, asking if he was going to be a one and done.
Yeah, I don't think that's far-fetched simply because of the fact that what do people take notice a lot of? They run the numbers these days. They're always focused on percentages and numbers. And we know when the Astros had literally hit rock bottom in the first half, people were looking at those numbers and we were talking about the slim chances of them being a playoff team, let alone being in contention to win the division. If they come back and win the division and they run away with it, national media are going to be more in tune with looking at that and saying, that guy just did one hell of a job because that team just did one hell of a job, as opposed to the local people that are more in tune and knowing how much he was involved with everything, you know, to kind of persevere and do this. He'll get some love.
Like if they run away with the division, like you said, and I think it's in play too, and they were 10 games back and they were so many games below 500, he's going to get some Manager of the Year votes. I think he has a chance to win it, to win Manager of the Year. His brother-in-law might have something to say with that in Baltimore.
He could be
Manager of the Year too. Brian, what's your boldest prediction, second half?
It kind of ties into something we talked about the other day with most likely regression candidates. But I think once Verlander comes back, let's hope it's soon, but whenever he comes back, from that stretch through the end of the season, I think Ronel Blanco is going to be your fourth best starter behind Verlander, Hunter Brown, and Framber Valdez.
Okay. I don't think that's that crazy of a take. Now, based on how he pitched in the first half is what makes it crazy. I don't think that he drops down to four. I think your fourth starter there is Verlander.
I kind of thought about that. I think that obviously everybody has some volatility where they can fluctuate. I think Verlander's going to settle in. I don't think he's going to be fourth. Honestly, I'm a little concerned that it could be Hunter Brown. I think, for me, who's going to settle down to fourth is going to be between Brown and Blanco. Blanco, because I'm worried about how much the taxing of his arm is, how much he's done more than he's ever done in the past. And Hunter Brown, he still gives me vibes that he has the potential to kind of blow up every now and then.
He's been really good last 2 months.
Yep.
I think that's probably why Brian said Blanco, is I think Blanco has some of that as well. Now, he hadn't shown it much this year. He's given up some home runs early in games, but then kind of settles down. I would have Verlander as the fourth most productive starter. Framber's fine to me. Like, he has these meltdown moments, but Framber's still, like, really stinking good, and his numbers are still really stinking good. I have there's a guy that always tells me how Hunter Brown has only beaten up bad competition and bad offenses. Now, to do it for 2 months, like, these lineups are pretty good, and even the bad lineups are good enough to beat you whenever you're not pitching well, and to be as consistent as Hunter Brown to do it for, like, 2 months, I don't put a whole lot of stock into that take, although you start looking at some of those teams that Hunter Brown has beaten, and you're like, okay, you know, maybe I should put more validity to that than I initially did. Verlander, like, I still don't know Verlander's health. And even when Verlander was healthy, it's not like he was lights out this year.
Yeah, no, we've talked about the fact that, look, it's no disrespect to him. More people look at the salary than anything else, but at his age, he's probably ripe to start kind of diminishing skill. And so that's something that people should have understood no matter how much money he makes. But I think that he still knows how to pitch, and I know he knows how to attack lineups. And I think that as long as this offensive lineup doesn't suffer any major setbacks, I think he's gonna be in ball games, and I think he's gonna do what he does. We talked about it. Maybe, you know, mid to 3.75 ERA ish for in and around there, but I think he'll be good enough to get them victories.
Yeah, but that's different. Like 3.75 ERA, is that top three starter?
Can be with this if the offensive lineup is right.
Well, I mean, that doesn't really matter. The offense doesn't matter.
No, I just don't think he's going to slide all the way down to four.
So you think Blanco, Brown, and Fromber will be worse than 3.75 ERA in the second half?
I think it's between Blanco and Brown. Yeah.
And you think one of them will?
Yep, I do. And I worry about the kind of the blow-ups from Brown, and I worry about Blanco, just the durability of his arm. If the velo was down a little bit, I'm very curious coming out of the break. I hope the rest helps him, and I hope that he's back to his regular form.
Now, see, I think the Astros are going to put things in play to try to help him in that regard. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think he's starting once every fifth day. I think that they add a sixth man into the rotation at some point. It might require a trade and Verlander coming back. But I do think that the Astros are mindful of that. Now, they probably have to go out and acquire an arm to then execute that, because you are in a race. Like, you can't just be like, okay, Blanco, he's been one of our best starters. He should have been an all-star. We're not going to use him every fifth day if we don't have a big league arm here, because we're still in this race. So you still have to go out and actually get the help. It's one thing to say it, then you actually have to do it.
Right, yeah. And I think that the other thing that goes back to our initial point, which is, if they're in a position to run away with this division, they're going to be more likely to go and take care of their pitching staff a little bit more than if they are in a dogfight down the stretch, and they're going to need these guys. And in the second half, not just down the stretch, that they're going to need their best pitchers, and they can't bring up a blue ball, or they can't, you know, keep throwing Bloss out there or other guys. That'll be interesting to watch, because we've talked about it. I think they make at least one move before the deadline for pitching, maybe two.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Cron.com had a couple of their bold second half predictions, but I don't like calling it a second half. John Singleton, summer of Singleton. What do you think Singleton's last month or so is for real?
I think it legitimizes him being a major league player. I think it's. I don't think he's going to be able to sustain it for the rest of the season. I think it's more so that he's kind of like, come to the middle of the, in the, he's, this is his hot spot again. We've seen him at rock bottom. I think he levels off a little bit more than this and comes down a couple notches. But again, because first base has been so bad, I think that can be enough for this team.
Yeah, I don't think that his current production over the last 30 days is his real life like figure like going forward. But I do think that he's capable of handling first base. I would like a platoon option, better than Mauricio Dubon. So maybe that's something they could acquire. Not a big splashy name like a Vladimir Guerrero, but a right-handed bat that can play some first base and can give Singleton days off against lefties, et cetera, et cetera. The other one they have, Brian Abreu, cruises again, becomes the best bullpen arm in the Astros' bullpen in the second half.
I hope they're right. I have already stated the fact that I have some concerns about his usage, but I hope they're right, because he has dominant stuff. And, it, you know, we've talked before the season started into the season about how lights out should be six. I mean, 7, 8, 9 with those three guys. Those guys have all kind of stumbled a little bit. He is a huge key for this team. You can deal without Presley, I think, as long as Abreu and Hader are good to above average. But, yeah, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I think he can be the best reliever second half. I do think he has the most dominant stuff of the three. Sometimes his command gives him in trouble, and you're right, he's been used a lot. Not egregiously more than he was used last year, but still a lot. I'd like them to stop using those guys when they're up by four to just try to ease up the load for those guys. All right, 713-780-3776. What's your boldest Astro prediction in the post All-Star break portion of the schedule? 713-780-3776. And what is the latest buzz around Major League Baseball? Where do the Astros stack up amongst the biggest players at the trade deadline? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
We are at East River 9. We're inside the River House. Had a fantastic lunch. Watching the British Open highlights. This is your spot to watch the... They don't like it when you call it the British Open. They prefer it to be called the Open Championship. So my bad to the folks over in the U.K. Name all those countries in the U.K.
I'm out.
Brian, how do you feel about the SEC not recognizing Texas as UT?
I missed this bit of news. What do they say?
They announced their first team, second team, pre-conference selections or whatever. And they're using an acronym for Texas that's not UT because Tennessee's already in the SEC, and I guess they've been grandfathered in as UT. They're using the TEX for Texas and not the UT.
Yeah, it's gonna make a lot of,
you know what they should have done? They should have just been TU.
See, I was waiting for the joke. That would bother me a little bit, mildly.
Yeah, let's just use the TU.
TEX doesn't bother me at all.
Todd Cowles will be joining us in 12 minutes, top of the hour, live from Seattle as the Astros get set for a three-game series against the first-place Mariners, first place on the line in Seattle. Game one of a three-game series beginning late tonight. How about this latest buzz around Major League Baseball? The Astros may be big players at the deadline, according to sources, joining the likes of the Yankees and the Dodgers. What would your idea be of going big? What names are there?
Well, to me, it's names and moves. I think that means that they're probably going to make three moves. I think that they're going to address multiple areas. I think that we know that they're going to – I think that their target is going to be starting pitching. But if they go starting pitching a bat and a relief arm, I would be amazed, and that would be big in itself. But if you talk about the biggest names, I know that there's been a lot of – it seems like there's been a lot more talk about a guy like Pete Alonso. I don't know if that's the right fit, and I don't know if they have the pieces to kind of put a package together for him.
I would be stunned if Pete Alonso's traded.
You think he's going to stay at the Mets and they're going to go for it?
And 46. Yeah. They're three games above 500. They're in the race.
Yep.
Cohen wants to re-sign Pete Alonso. Yeah, I would be stunned if Pete Alonso is traded. They're currently in the playoffs.
Yep. Yeah, no, and so you start thinking about, well, who are – is it name? Is it Crochet? Because I don't think they can get into that sweepstakes. I think the Dodgers and Yankees are going to throw a ton more resources out of more desperation to get Crochet for the stretch run because they desperately need pitching more so than the Astros. So maybe for me it's more the amount of moves that can help this team than it is that big blockbuster name, because if you hear what's coming out of Toronto, they, as much as they're not in as advantageous a position as the Mets, they have been telling people quietly so far that they're not interested in trading Vladdy Jr. or Bichette or Bassett or some of the guys that, you know, have interest around the league. So I would think it would be more that the amount of moves that Dana and his staff are willing to make that are going to benefit this team, because I think if they go big, to me, that means that they address all needs, that they get one or two pitchers and they get a bat.
See, the more I look at this and the more I dissect this and think about it, to me, the chances of the Astros trading for a top of the market guy at the deadline is incredibly slim. I don't think they're going to be remotely close to an offer that it would take to get Crochet. I think there's a decent chance they don't trade Crochet. There's no desperation to do that. He has years of club control, so they're going to have to be knocked off their feet with a trade offer. I don't think the Astros are A, capable, B, willing. Same thing with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's still, like, will he be traded? The Blue Jays are kind of, they're unknown whether they want to keep him because they might want to win next year. He's still under contract for another season. So I don't, like, to buzzkill Brian, I mean, I know it's a very safe thing to say, I don't believe the Astros are going to be in on any of the top names. Sure, they'll call Dana Brown. That's his job. But he's not going to ultimately get that done. I think there's a chance they make three trades, but they're going to be for lesser names. And I think that you hit those positions. I think there are four options at positions that the Astros could trade for. Starting pitching is obviously one of them. I think they could trade for middle relief, not a huge name. But middle relief, I think they could trade for a right-handed bat that either plays first base or left field. Pipe dream would be the first baseman for the Rays. He would be
Yandy Diaz.
He'd be my top target that it was out there. I like dealing with the Rays. Not usually because they win trades, but I like the guys that they have on their trade their trading block. So the Rays would be a partner that I would look for. So first base, left field, I think another possibility is utility. I think they could have a utility guy that they could trade for. So those are the four positions. And I think they could trade for any one of them, but I just think they're not going to be household names. I think they're going to be like middle name value.
Yeah, because I think, you know, even when you talk about, you know, first base options, I don't think Arizona's going to be sellers either. I think at the end of the day, the names that we've previously discussed are with teams that, you know, coming in Arizona's case, similar to what we talked about, you know, the Mets with Cohen, he wants to win. He doesn't want to be sellers for another year. I think with Arizona coming off a World Series appearance, the last thing they want to do is just sell out after that year and not be in it till the bitter end, whether they get in or not. So it, to me, it's going to be the amount of trades they make with getting guys that can help at multiple positions of need.
713-780-ESPN, 9506, pass on Pete Alonso, but I'd love to eat big salaries and get some B-minus type players like Nolan and Goldschmidt when they went to St. Louis. Not me. Like, I don't want to trade for big salaries. The Astros have had a couple of bad salaries here recently. They've had to already eat one of those in Jose Abreu. They might be on the cusp of eating another one in Rafael Montero. You could argue if Josh Hader's worth $19 million a year for 5 years that they signed him to. So I'm not. Now, this makes it more difficult because if they make lesser salary, club control, the package you have to put together is going to be more expensive, where if it's an overpriced player, you don't have to use the you know, trade capital to go out and get that guy. But I'm not signing up for any bad contracts.
No, and the thing is you also, because of the fact that you want the sustainability to compete and continue to compete for several years to come, you also know that you're going to have a decision to make on Bregman. And if he walks, you want to at least have the financial ability, if you want to go out in free agency, to try and replace him short-term, long-term, or otherwise. You know that Fromber in another year, Tucker in another year, those are guys that you're going to be working with. You don't want to add a ton of extra salary that limits your options if, in fact, you have tough decisions to make on those type players.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. What'll be your shock factor if they did trade for, you know, I don't think Alonzo's getting traded, but a Vlad, an Alonzo, a Crochet.
I'd be stunned. I really would be stunned because, I mean, it's to the point that you made. The competition at just about every position, but specifically as it relates to starting pitching and if you're going to get a bigger name, there's going to be multiple teams that are going to be interested. And because their farm systems are probably a lot deeper and because they're not looking to try and win the World Series per se, but in a lot of cases they're just trying to get there. And if they've been bad for several years, they can stockpile and their farm system is more replenished and full, that they'll be willing to throw a lot just to get to where they need to go because it'll move the needle in their market.
Jacob on Twitter says outfield is the last thing we need. I couldn't disagree more. I think there is currently a hole in left field. And if you think that Loperfido is filling that void, okay. Well, Loperfido can handle left field whenever righties are on the mound and when Tucker is back. But he's a lefty, and do you trust him against left-handed big league pitching right now? I don't.
I don't either.
The Astros are still using a lot of Chaz McCormick and a lot of Mauricio Dubon in the outfield against left-handed pitchers, and quite frankly, both of them are below-average hitters. Dubon's closer to average than Chaz. Chaz has been overwhelmingly poor. So if you're good with running Chaz McCormick out there against left-handed pitchers all the time, that's on you, but his OPS is under 600. I think it's a pretty critical need for the Astros.
I agree with you. I think it's a need because on top of everything that you said, you also have to be cognizant of the fact that Yordan Alvarez plays such a big part in the offensive production of this team and how far it can go that you don't want him to be playing left field at a high frequency where he can get hurt. We have highlighted the Yordan rules, but we've also seen when he slips and falls that everybody holds their breath and hopes to God that it's just a scrape on the knee and a strawberry as opposed to even a hamstring or something worse. So you can't afford to and you don't want to put him out there at a frequent basis, which means because of that, coupled with the underproduction of Chaz and the inexperience and right now where Joey Loperfido is in his career, I think the ideal solution is a versatile bat that can play corner outfield and can play first base because now Espada has more things he can do with his lineup. But I definitely think that a bat in the outfield is something that they got to look at.
713-780-ESPN. Twitch is saying trade Chaz. A lot of people have said trade Chaz. The issue with trading Chaz is his value is so low. I think the most they could get for Chaz McCormick is like a middle reliever.
Yeah.
A middle reliever, which maybe that's worth it. Maybe it's worth to do that because that's the only way you can acquire an additional relief pitching arm. I just don't think that, I mean, Chaz McCormick's not moving many teams' needles.
Would you trade Chaz McCormick for a Maton-type guy?
Personally, I would not, no. I don't think a Maton-type guy helps you a whole lot. I don't think it really improves you a whole lot.
Yeah,
and I don't think it matters at all in the playoffs, quite frankly.
I think that if it was the Maton guy you traded for when he was in coming from Cleveland, that, you know, he had closer experience, he had kind of back of the bullpen-ish.
I don't think Maton had closer experience when you traded for him.
I thought he did with Cleveland.
I don't think so.
I think he had some regardless, he was back of the bullpen type guy for Cleveland.
He has four career saves.
Okay.
He had zero in Cleveland.
Okay, I was wrong. But I'm just saying back of the bullpen type stuff to where you get a guy with a veteran with experience. When he was at that point in his career and you got him, I thought that he was extremely effective here. But I just don't think Chaz has the value to bring back that type of a guy.
No, I don't either. To me, he's given you at best a middle reliever. I think you just send Chaz down if you make a trade and then hope he can find it again, and it gives you a little bit of outfield depth in the organization. I think it's better to keep him in that regard than to trade for a fifth-inning reliever or a low-leverage reliever. I would just send him down to AAA, hope he can figure it out and give you outfield depth, quite frankly. Dre says Chaz can get Crane a new AC system at Minute Maid Park. Sold. Sold. I'm doing it. I'm in.
Yeah, look, a lot of people were complaining lately about the AC in the park. Don't complain about it because guess what? Much like the batter's eye, if I don't care where the air conditioning's at. If it means that they're hitting the baseball and winning games at home, leave everything the way it is right now.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the River House at East River 9 in Edo. Step aside for a moment. When we come back, we'll talk to the voice of the Astros. Todd Callis joins us next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good people at Vanderford Air. Vanderford Air, best in the business at handling all your air conditioning, your plumbing needs, your heating needs. When it comes to all those type things. But the best thing about Vanderford Air is, especially with you getting your power back and knowing how important next to your power your AC units are, that they are going to be focused on taking care of you every single step of the way. They give you quality installations. They do quality work. They cool your home to the temperature you want. They dehumidify your home as well. And the fact is the guarantees are second to none. That means it starts with the fact that when you call them, no matter how hot it is and how many people are demanding their services, within 24 hours of you calling them, they're going to be there to see you. Guaranteed. Then after that, everything is guaranteed. The parts they use, the systems they put in, the work that their people do, it's all going to be guaranteed to your satisfaction or your money back. Performance is guaranteed, the workmanship guaranteed, the comfort and quality temperature assurances are guaranteed, and they're going to give you the best value at the lowest cost to you. That's why I speak for them, because those are the guarantees you want when you're doing businesses with services with customers and companies like this. Check it out today. Go to VanderfordAir.com and see all the services they offer. And as I always tell you to do, put this number in your phone because you never know when you're going to need it, or maybe have them come out and check it out and check your system out before it gets to be too late. 281-557-COOL. Easy to remember. 281-557-COOL. Call the people at Vanderford Air.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.